Podcasting with a Z, and I am back. And I'm just waiting for my guest, and this is going to be a fun interview. It's about schools. It's called The Magical Place We Call School, and I'm hoping she will call in any minute. Of course, I always love the books that I'm talking about. And now I am so happy to welcome Dr. Kathleen Corley, and her book is called The Magical Place We Call School, Creating a Safe Space for Learning and Happiness in a Challenging World. Dr. Corley, are you there?
I am.
First, I'm going to ask you a very serious question. Are you real?
Am I real? Yes.
You're a human being, right?
I'm quite real. I'm not a cyborg or something done on a hologram. I'm actually a person.
But, of course, you are in danger of perhaps being cloned. Somebody, look, one of those mystery workshops somewhere in Silicon Valley might just capture you and clone you. Because if you are as good as your book, they need to clone you. We need to have you all over the country.
To be fair, I am surrounded by wonderful people.
So it
makes being just a little bit better than adequate compensatory. That's the way it needs to be. So we lift each other up.
Yeah, but you're something special. And I must say, with your voice, you have such a fantastic voice. Not many authors can actually do their own audible. So you have a fantastic voice. And
oh, thank you.
Big Ed in the control room, would you play the opening I wanted to play for Dr. Corley? Okay, Big Ed, that's enough. I just wanted to get the idea in here. Is this school real? Red Cedar Elementary School is a real school?
It is a real school, and there are other schools that are very much like us all over the country.
Wow.
People just don't know that they're there.
They certainly don't, because until I read this book, I'd given up hope. It's amazing. Is it true? I don't know. I should have asked you to read the opening few lines of your book, because it's so beautifully done. But some of the things that you write about, miles of smiles. And I can see that. I love that you play an instrument and the flute particularly, because I played the flute. So tell us why, what you're doing in the morning when school starts and they play that call to post.
When they play that call to post, that's when the students can get out of their cars. They're usually lined up. They start lining up about 7 a.m., and at 7:15, we have people on duty to greet them. And so when the bell plays, when the system plays call to post, they get out of their cars and start coming into the building. They're greeted by a handful of people out in front. There are other people in the back who are greeting the children who are coming by bus. Sometimes I'm out front. More often than not, I'm inside and I'm playing some sort of instrument. On Tuesdays and Thursdays in the morning, we have a drum and dance team. This morning we played drums and did drums and flags because we march in parades. We have about 85, 90 students who are in that. So that cuts down a little bit on my time to play an instrument, whichever one I grab. And then there's also a young lady who's in fifth grade who doesn't speak very much English. When she came to us, she didn't speak any. She came last year as a fourth grader. She is, we've found, somewhat of a musical savant, and I'm not sure anybody knew that, but we play music together. We usually play the piano, and I'll play something, and she'll mimic it, and she'll make it better. Sometimes that happens, too, but music has incredible power over people. Just incredible. So if there's a way to get to someone, to get them interested in something, we're going to do it. And I majored in music. That was my undergrad, and it was voice. I'm down for that.
I'm a great believer in music, too. I think it motivates. It motivates me. There are songs that I play, sometimes a polka in the morning. It gets me going. I love it. So I love that you're doing this. I don't know if somebody's made a movie about you and your school. If it's as good as you're writing about, they should, because they write the movies about teachers all the time, but I haven't seen anything like this. So now explain what happens after the call to post and what's next.
Okay, the students go to class. I do the morning announcements, and I end with today the announcements had to do with, we have this book vending machine that you probably read about, has these little gold coins, and we were looking for a way to determine who gets a gold coin, because it's worth something like maybe $10, $12 if they get a hardcover book out of the book vending machine. So it needs to be relatively special. So there were four students, that's a big number for today, who were honored today because someone, an adult usually, recommended them for having done something nice for someone to get a book. There was a boy, I call him Peter, in the book. There's a group of students who ride their bikes to school, and on the way to school, one of the children's bikes had a flat tire. It was a girl. So Peter said, "For on the way home, I'll take your bike, you take my bike, I'll take your bike to my house. My dad and I will fix your tire, then I'll ride your bike back to your house, and then I'll get my bike, and then I'll ride it back to my house." And I thought, that's a pretty spectacular thing to do, taking that upon to help somebody out. You announce the name, you say just what I just said, and this is why we're honoring Peter. If you know that Peter's coming down the hall, if your teacher allows it, you might lean outside and say, "Way to go, Peter." And then they do hear applause. They walk down the hall like they just won the Olympics, and as well they should. And then we take a picture of them with us, with the book, and it goes on our social media, and their parents keep reposting it, and their grandparents get to see it, and that's the way it ought to be. That's the next thing that happens.
Yeah, that's the way it ought to be. This is not a private school. This is a public school, right?
Yeah, it's a public school. We're part of Beaufort County School District. Beaufort County covers Beaufort City and Port Royal and Hilton Head and Bluffton and Pritchardville and Okotoks.
South Carolina, for people who don't know. Now, we're going to step out. We're going to step back outside, because I want to go back outside for a minute. I want to hear this description. This is too beautiful. Tell us about the apple pie and the picnic blanket. I wish I had. I should have had you read it yourself, but tell us how you visualize the opening of day, opening of school.
Are you talking about the apple pie and the red velvet cake?
You know, not that story. We'll get to that one.
Okay.
No, here when they're walking into school, how do you describe them?
Describe them? Oh. That was describing them on the first day of school.
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Describe that. I love it.
They are so ready to go, especially the kindergartners, which seems odd. Some of them cry, but more of their parents cry, because as soon as they see the school, there are children who bolt into the school, wish to get to school. And we say, "Wait, did you say goodbye to Mom?" "Yeah, okay, goodbye." "No," and then Mom's crying. "No, she can't go to school all by herself. Oh, my gosh." But they can't wait to get back together. And it was especially that way after COVID. Our first opportunity to be back in school together and to be reasonably close to each other. I think the rule was 6 feet at that time. We were ecstatic. And the children just thought they had died and gone to heaven, because they were back with their friends, they were back with their teachers, and it was like a first day of school all over again.
Describe the image of if you were looking at them from above. Describe how you describe.
Oh, Anne's at a picnic. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I love that. No, I want it all.
Sorry. Yes, they're just like Anne's at a picnic, because they're all moving in the direction of what you might think would be the food if they were really ants, but they're not. So they're moving in the direction of where their classrooms are. You see them in the parking lot, in front of the building. You see them coming off the buses in the back. And then if you could take the lid off the school, if you could take the roof off, you would see them making their way into their classrooms because they've come the Friday before with their parents, nearly all of them, to see where they're going to be in class. So everybody knows where they're going to be.
Now, you mentioned that they're wearing uniforms and they have miles of smiles.
Yes.
They're wearing uniforms or not?
Yes, they are wearing uniforms. It's a rule in the district, but some of us take it more seriously than others. That is, if the uniform is red, white, or yellow polo shirts and a child wears a jacket over that says, I don't know, really doesn't matter what it says. Metallica, I'll go way back. Or Britney Spears or Taylor Swift or whatever, doesn't have to say anything. But if it's not our colors, why are we doing uniforms? So take your jacket off, hang it up. If you need a sweatshirt, a red one, a white one, a yellow one will be fine if they're plain, or a red spirit sweatshirt, which would have our logo on it with Foxy. Foxy is our mascot. In other words, keep the uniform thing going. And if they're supposed to tuck their shirts in, they tuck their shirts in. If they're supposed to have belts, they have belts. We tried belts in kindergarten. Bad idea. Wet cleanup aisle 3. Because they don't plan well enough when they need to go to the bathroom. We give them a little pass on kindergarten and first grade. It just saves wear and tear on the custodial staff.
I'm flabbergasted, really. When I started reading the book, and I didn't know, I'm going to tell you, I didn't know that schools like that existed. We don't see this in the news. I can tell you we don't see this. We don't see them with miles and smiles. And all the things that you do ahead of time, like getting them ready in the springtime and already preparing the students, and talk about this Tacopalooza, and then later on you have a big event that involves all the students. Where did you come? Was all of this your idea? Because I've never heard of anybody having schools like this.
If you think about it, any business or any organization, a church, radio station has to have some intentionality about what they're doing. After a little while, you learn to do things better than you did before. And remember, we have parents who have demands, requests, puzzlements. Sometimes they're engaged. Sometimes they're overly engaged. Some don't want to be engaged at all. And we need to make sure every student has a support system, and we like to start with parents, but we'll work around them if we absolutely, positively have to. If you're going to be intentional about everything you do, that doesn't mean it's a lockstep sort of thing, but we always want to have a reveal at the end of the year for what classes students are going into the next year. For some of them, it's no surprise because kindergarten and first grade teachers pair up. A kindergarten teacher works with a first grade teacher, and there's an assistant that they share. Okay, so the kindergartners in Mrs. Binkley's class are, by design, going to be first graders in Mrs. Howell's class because Mrs. Howell has been next door all year, and she knows those students just about as well as Mrs. Binkley does. So there's no surprise there. When they go to second grade, that's a surprise. It's in a different hallway. And they will know on Tacopalooza night, and I'll get to why it's like that in a second. But they go to their second grade classroom. But when they're going to third grade, they're not going anywhere. It's the same teacher who loops up with them second grade to third grade because we have fewer transitions that way, and fewer transitions are good at elementary level. Fourth to fifth grade, same thing. You with me so far?
Uh-huh.
Okay,
I love it.
Tacopalooza is, if we can feed them, and it's rare that we can feed them anymore because the way our finances work and what we are allowed to spend money on, it's not so much the finances themselves, but if it looks like it's we're just feeding people all the time just for the heck of it, they're not going to let us do that. Tacapalooza is generally funded from the outside somewhere. That's another intentional thing. We have an agenda book, which is basically an elongated calendar, has assignments in it, has special dates, tells you when to wear your spirit shirt, tells you when Tacapalooza is going to be, tells you that our spring break is next week, all of that. Those are sponsored by, they're expensive. They're about $6,000 to make enough for everybody in the school. We have two law firms with children who go here. Their parents run the law firms. Hey, guys, are you interested in supporting that? Absolutely. Okay. We'll put you down for that. We'll put your logo on the back of the book, and all will be right with the world. The taco thing is the taco thing because we need to reward the parents for coming through the line. This is almost insidious, this next part. We have to tell everybody every year about the Read to Succeed law in South Carolina, which says that if third graders taking the state test perform very poorly on the test, they will be retained unless they're one of a couple of things that would change that. A student who has not been in the United States for more than 2 years would not be retained. A child with an individualized education plan and special needs would not be retained. A child who has already been retained would not be retained. At the door, we funnel people into classrooms so that they can hear a very short presentation, and we have English and Spanish classrooms just because it's faster that way rather than translating everything. So direct Spanish, direct English. And when they leave, they get a plate to put their tacos on, but nobody gets a taco until they listen to the presentation. That's the insidious part.
Oh, boy. Now, let's step back
again. But we need for them to hear it. We need for them to hear it. We don't want them to be unhappy. So, now you get tacos. Yay!
First of all, this law in South Carolina, is this in other states? Because we hear about so many states where kids are being moved from class to class until finally they're in 12th grade and they are reading at a 4th grade level.
Yes, you're talking about social promotion. That, I think, happens all kinds of places, but I think states have come to grips with the problem in a variety of ways, and I know that there are other states that do it this way, but South Carolina decided to do this at third grade because their determination is if you can't read well by third grade, you're going to have a significant problem in all the other grades because we like to say in kindergarten and first grade and second grade and third grade, you learn to read. Fourth and up, you read to learn because you're reading about other subjects then. You need to know how to read.
What a great concept. It's just so funny. It seems so logical, but it seems like I think there's a lot of places that don't quite get it. Now, did you ever teach third grade, by the way?
No, I taught music.
Not
I taught
music.
Third graders. I taught pre-kindergartners through eighth graders.
Okay. So you mentioned third grade because I have a – here's where I come from. I had a terrible time in third grade, just terrible. I had a teacher who, one, we had just come from northern Michigan down to Detroit – and I'm left-handed, and she made me sit on my left hand. And then I wouldn't read out loud, because when I was in third grade, by the time I was in third grade, I was reading Perry Mason paperback books. I could read. I could read. I read over 10,000 books in my life. So at that age, I could read, and I wouldn't read out loud. And so she called me in front of everybody. She called me a dummy. Now, of course, I thought she meant, thinking back on it, I was thinking she meant stupid, but she must have known that I could read because, but I was, of course, maybe she didn't know I could write because she wouldn't let me Right. So it took 3 weeks before my father finally figured out there was something wrong. And he walked in and said, by the way, Betsy can read anything you have in this school. You're so caring. Obviously your people around you, you instill this caring. I find this magical.
Part of it is what I instill, but a lot of it is by now there are people who know how we do things and they want to be a part of it because they are like-minded. So it's not like I've molded everybody in my image, because they certainly are not, and that's a good thing. But they come to us wanting to be a part of what we do because they agree with the things that we do. Some of it is just common sense and taking care of little things and getting them out of the way of the teachers so they can work their magic.
I'm running out of time. I want to just repeat the title of your book. It's called The Magical Place We Call School, and it is by Dr. Kathleen Corley. And I suggest to everybody that you get this book. If not, well, for many reasons. First, the cover is great. I love the cover. And you explain that in the book. I don't have time here. It's subtitled Creating a Safe Space for Learning and Happiness in a Challenging World. I think it should be really Creating Joy for Learning and Happiness in a Challenging World. Because what you're doing is joyful. I just thinking of you, I have to talk to you more, okay? Big Ed in the control room, would you play the song I want to play out? And Dr. Corley, thank you so much. I'm going to be in contact. I'm going to have you back, okay?
Okay.
And here's a song
thank
for you.
Yes.
Okay. This is for you, Dr. Corley. I love you.
Take care.
Okay, you too. You'll be back.